Well, good afternoon, Juneau. It's Pat Moore, your host for Juneau Afternoon today. It's 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau. And today we'll be talking with Kyle Wiley-Pickett and Ron Mass about Saturday's Juneau Symphony Pops concert. A pair of French globetrotters who are hitchhiking from Patagonia to Prudhoe will probably drop in on the studio today. Ralph Steves will be here to highlight the tours that are being held at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Facility. And Nancy DeCherney will give us the weekly rundown on art happenings during Arts Up. The weather looks like it's going to clear up this weekend. Today and tonight and Friday we have showers in the forecast, but Friday night it calms down to mostly cloudy. Saturday, decreasing clouds, and Saturday night partly cloudy, and then Sunday mostly cloudy with the highs around 63.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Officials with South Dakota's Oglala Sioux Tribe are concerned about recent cases of a disease. A child has died of hantavirus, and at least one new case has been reported. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Health officials on the Pine Ridge Reservation say the victim was a girl less than 10 years old. Lab tests confirm the child died of hantavirus. The illness is rare but deadly. It is spread by rodents or rodent droppings in urine and can cause respiratory failure. Pine Ridge is not the first reservation to see an outbreak of hantavirus. Nearly 20 years ago, several people died in the Navajo Nation in the southwest U.S. Health officials in Utah say two people have died in that state of hantavirus. Health officials on Pine Ridge are reaching out to Oglala Sioux tribal members, stressing that the illness is preventable. They're offering cleaning kits, which include gloves, masks, and bleach, to residents on the reservation. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Montana reservations are participating in a pilot initiative to address sexual assault on tribal lands. U.S. Justice Department officials and a tribal leader announced Wednesday sexual assault response teams will be established on 6 reservations. Members will include attorneys, victim specialists, advocates, law enforcement, and health care representatives to meet at least once a month. The teams will be created in the next 6 months. The Justice Department says American Indian and Alaska Native women are raped at higher rates than any other race. And despite the alarming rates, sexual assault is the most underreported crime. A week-long workshop was recently held to help revive Native American languages. KGOU's Susan Shannon has more.
The University of Oklahoma's Sam Noble Museum in Norman hosted the Breath of Life workshop, that is literally breathing life, back into what Dr. Mary Lynn calls sleeping languages.
It's aimed at how you find and use archival language materials. Once you find them, you really need to know linguistics to know even how to read them, because a lot of these materials were written years ago in many different scripts, many different kinds of writing systems, and we can teach you that kind of thing. Once you can crack the code and understand language better, then we take to the next step of then how do you start learning from having no speech.
Daryl Baldwin from the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma directs the Miamia Project at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. It was his interest in learning his own tribe's language that this concept was born, but he concedes it's not just about language.
No, this is not just language class. This is our people collectively, both old and young, beginning the process of rebuilding their nation, and language and culture is an integral part of that process.
Andrea Maru, a Maori from New Zealand and a PhD student at the University of Texas, was a mentor to the Wichita group.
My group, they're looking to put recorded text on their website. So their language hasn't been recorded since the 1930s, so this was a great opportunity for them to do that. It was just great to be able to help them do something with their language and actually have some, you know, product at the end of the week. And so what they've done this week is actually already up on their website.
It is a 5-day workshop, and Henrietta Ellis from the Absentee Shawnee Tribe did feel a little overwhelmed.
Linguistically, a little more than I was ready for, but I've gotten a lot of good ideas of what I can use with the youth of our tribe and trying to plan more programs and activities.
As the workshop came to a close, it was obvious it wasn't just about the language revival. It's revival in their respective cultures, too. From Norman, Oklahoma, for National Native News, I'm Susan Shannon.
On this day in 1954, Native American author Louise Erdrich was born. She's the author of novels, poetry, short stories, children's books, and a memoir of early motherhood. Her book, The Plague of Doves, was a finalist for the 2009 Pulitzer Prize. Erdrich took a stand against Indian mascots in 2007 by turning down an honorary doctorate from the University of North Dakota. She's from a North Dakota tribe and grew up in the state. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 6.5 minutes after 3 o'clock. The music, of course, is An American in Paris, and here to talk about the fact that you'll be able to hear the Juno version of An American in Paris. Is it American in Juno, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it's or a Juno-ide in Paris, maybe.
There you go. There you go. It's Kyle Wiley Pickett, our guest, to tell us about the Pops concert this weekend with the Thunder Mountain Big Band.
That's right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what's going on?
Going to be a great concert on Saturday night. This is our annual Pops concert, and in our Pops concert, we always try to do music that's familiar and fun and light and certainly accessible, although I would say year-round we're trying to do music that's fun and accessible. But this concert I'm really excited about. We are joined on stage simultaneously with the Thunder Mountain Big Band and the Juno Symphony, and we are playing a concert that focuses on I guess for lack of a better way to describe it, jazz influence in the orchestral world. And we are playing two big pieces by Duke Ellington that are actually written for big band and orchestra. We're playing another couple Duke Ellington hits. We're playing a couple standards like Stardust and Autumn Serenade and Old Devil Moon. And the big band's going to play a few numbers on their own, like Bye Bye Blackbird and Embraceable You. And then we close the whole show with George Gershwin's American in Paris.
All right. So the big band consists of what? How many players?
The big band, the Thunder Mountain Big Band. This is Ron Moss's band, and this is it's five saxes, three trombones, and four trumpets. The piano and rhythm section, which is piano and bass and drums.
Drum set.
Mm-hmm. And then it's the full orchestra. So you know, the full string section, full wind section, brass section, percussion, the whole shebang, and we're all sitting on stage together.
Yeah, it's great to have a stage big enough to stage
these
kinds of
interesting things. It is. It's good to have a stage big enough. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so back to Ellington and composing for orchestra and big band. Ellington's thought of, I think, as a jazz big band era musician,
right.
But he had some classical training too, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he did, and you know, he had a long career too.
Yeah.
I mean, he really, you know, he was going well into the 70s, into his 70s and into the 1970s.
Our 70s, yes.
Yeah, into his 80s and our 1970s. And the big band and orchestra collaborations happened over a couple periods in his life, one kind of in the mid and then one late in his life. And you know, he wanted, you know, big band, I was talking earlier to someone, you know, jazz as an art form has just about as many different avenues and arms and legs as classical music does.
Yeah.
And the big band era, you know, you and I were just talking about Benny Goodman and you know, of course there's Glenn Miller and of course Duke Ellington's band, and those big bands, they really varied in composition and size, and often included strings.
Mm-hmm.
Often included woodwinds. Of course, Benny Goodman is a clarinet player.
particularly when Hollywood would suck up a big band into a performance.
Yeah,
exactly. They would always add the string section and everything else. Yeah.
And so it's a natural fit. I mean, it's actually the orchestra and the big band, they're natural partners. And Ellington knew that, and so he wanted to write a couple pieces that were really for the concert hall, not for the nightclub. And so he wrote, in addition to the two that we're playing one called Night Creature, which is somewhat symphonic in scope, three-movement piece that's, you know, really kind of traditional, you know, traditional classical form in jazz. And then the other piece that we're doing, Grand Slam Jam, is a little bit more of a vehicle or a venue for jazz solos to exist within an orchestral setting. Mm-hmm. But then he wrote a few others, Black, Brown, and Beige, and Three Kings, and he had five or six really substantial pieces for big band and orchestra.
Sometimes this doesn't work. I can't think of a specific example, but I can remember times when the critics have said, total failure, the band and the orchestra never put it together.
Yeah.
What's the trick to making it work?
I'll tell you, I think the first ingredient to making it work is start with one of the great geniuses of music. And that's Duke Ellington.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'd say without dispute, Duke Ellington, George Gershwin, you know, they're two of the highest examples of art in 20th century America.
Mm-hmm.
And so start with Duke Ellington. It's going to go pretty well. And I think that's really true. I think there are a lot of examples in the orchestral pops world where things don't work very well. And I'm thinking about, you know, symphonic Pink Floyd. That just, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
You know, mariachi music with the orchestra. let me tell you.
Don't do this anymore.
No. There's the John Denver Celebration. You know, those things,
God, I'm going to be sick over here.
They don't work very well. They're not appropriate to the instrument.
Yeah.
But like I said, you know, the big band sound and the orchestral sound works really well. I'll give you a little preview. Next year, next year's our 50th anniversary, and our Pops concert next year, a year from now, is going to be a Motown concert.
All right.
And that's yet another avenue where the orchestra fits really well because the Motown sound, the original Motown sound, used strings and winds and brass.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that if that's a long answer to your question of what makes it work. And I think the big part of it is that it actually is appropriate for the instrument we play, and that instrument is the orchestra.
Is the orchestra, yeah. So... the concert, again, now...
The concert is Saturday night.
Uh-huh. One
Saturday
performance,
night,
right?
One performance.
Yeah, missed this one, you missed
that's
it all.
That's right.
Right.
No Sunday performance. Saturday night only. 8 o'clock,
uh-huh.
JDHS. No pre-concert talk. So I don't do the talk before the concert. I'm going to talk a little bit between the pieces. And you can get the tickets at all the normal places, Hearthside Books, at the Jack, online, at the door. Tickets are going pretty well. Tickets are selling well. So, you know, get your ticket soon.
Yeah, you can wind up with a sellout house for this.
Well,
one,
don't
yeah.
be dissuaded. I mean, I'm sure that if you show up at the day of the concert,
somebody will get you through the door. Yeah,
yeah, okay. you'll get in definitely. But it's going great. We've been rehearsing with the big band, and that's been a treat. People often ask me. They'll say, you know, Kyle, you're a symphony conductor. What do you listen to at home?
Uh-huh.
And the truth is, I listen to a lot of big band. I'll put on Ella Fitzgerald or Duke Ellington or John Coltrane, Miles Davis. You know, that I really enjoy listening to that just in my leisure time. And so I've got a great love for this style of music. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned Gershwin. But Gershwin, you know, American in Paris is one of the greatest works of the 20th century.
Well, this will be your closing number, and it'll be our closing number as well. So Saturday night, 8 p.m., JDHS, one shot at this great concert.
Juno Symphony and the Thunder Mountain Big Band.
And Thunder Mountain Big Band collaboration. Okay. You'll hear that closing chord again. Saturday night at the JDHS Auditorium, the concert starts at 8 o'clock, so that'll probably happen about 2 hours later, and that will be the closing chord to George Gershwin's American in Paris, the closing number in the concert this weekend for the Symphony Pops and the Thunder Mountain Big Band combined. So put that on your ticket list. My next two guests are two ladies from France who are passing through Juneau on their way from somewhere around Patagonia all the way to Prudhoe, and they're hitchhiking. Somebody said you've had 200 and some odd rides so far.
A little more than that.
800.
This is Amélie and Marion. Amélie, so where are you from?
We're sisters, so we're both from Paris.
Oh, okay. And what was it that suddenly caused you to say, oh, I'm not doing anything this weekend, let's hitchhike from Latin America to Alaska?
Well, we've been planning that for years ahead, so for 4 years. And I was curiosity. We wanted to know about American continent, South, Central, and North. So, yeah, we just decided to leave and to know about it.
Marion, how long have you been on the road?
20 months, a little over 20 months.
20 months.
Yeah.
So you've gone through a couple of season changes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But we try to stick to the sunshine, stick to the summer.
Stay where it's warm? Well,
yeah.
Actually, if you can stay around till Saturday, it looks like the rain is going away sometime Friday night, according to the Weather
right.
Bureau. And then it looks like this weekend is going to be just a typical lovely Juneau weekend.
We see the sunshine in Haines.
Oh, okay. Well, Haines gets our same weather quite often,
yeah.
too. So how are you going to hitchhike from here to Haines?
Well,
there's
some little parts that we don't take planes, but some little parts we take boats once in a while
it's ground or water transportation.
Absolutely,
for the whole tour.
Yeah.
So what's the most exciting thing you've seen, besides Juneau, which I know is, of course, the highlight of your entire trip, but what was the most exciting thing, Amélie?
We had so many experiences. I don't know, there's some places that are exciting for the place or for the people, and I don't know, maybe I would say our diving trip in Belize.
Ooh.
Because like we were looking for just a place to stay for free, and then we've been kind of invited to dive and we didn't know about it, and that's quite expensive, but we got it for free to experience.
Wonderful.
That.
So this was with lungs, with the diving equipment.
Yeah.
So you went way there.
Yeah, so we've got lots of opportunity that we couldn't afford to experience. And that's just one example, but there were lots.
Yeah. Marion, yours?
Well, we had there's a lot of places we like for very different reasons. Sometimes
uh-huh.
it's just the stunning scenery, and sometimes I'd just be meeting wonderful people, even though the place might not have much excitement about the place.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's just about the people. We can probably do a top 10, but just one place I wouldn't be able to answer.
So when you go back to Paris now, you'll be sitting in some little Paris sidewalk cafe, and your friends will say, well, tell us about your trip. So what are you going to tell them?
You can read the blog. There's like hours and hours of reading, but yeah, we've been writing it every week for the past 20 months, so there's lots to read, all experiences. We write about the good and the bad, everything.
Is the blog in English?
That's in French,
it's
but
in
you
French.
Can translate it with some
with
translator.
The, with the software, yeah,
yeah,
and then it picks
not,
all the strange words
yeah.
for all of the strange words, right? If someone reads French, they can follow the blog.
Yes, and anyone can look at the pictures anyway.
Uh-huh. Are you going to write a book?
We're planning to, yeah.
You are?
We
okay.
have a lot of work when we come back, but
yeah.
we already have a good base of the blog. So
when you come back, what are your lives when you're not hitchhiking from Latin America to Alaska?
Well, I was before, I used to live in Ireland, in Dublin, and I was working in restaurants.
Uh-huh.
But I've no plan yet for coming back to the real life.
Are you going back to France, or will you go back to Ireland?
Possibly.
Oh.
Well, we kind of come back for a little bit, and then we don't know.
And then you don't
Big
know.
Big question mark.
So as you've walked along, and ridden along and like that, have you talked about your next big adventure? What are you
going to do? No, we don't know about the next adventure.
Oh, you're just looking out the windows and enjoying this one, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to... Alaska has been the... Since we started this trip, it's been the end of it, the aim that we wanted to reach. So we just got here. And so now it's our last month of this big trip. And then, yeah, we can go for new ones.
Well, you still have a lot of Alaska to cover.
Yeah.
Let me assure you. We're 540,000 square miles here. So I saw a wonderful T-shirt the other day that someone was wearing. It had a picture of Texas outline in the middle of a map of Alaska, and the caption was, "Isn't Texas cute?" So you got a lot of land area to cover here.
Yeah,
and, about 7 climate zones.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We won't be able to go everywhere because we'd like to sit by the road
right.
This time anyway, so we won't be able to get anywhere. We can't get anywhere far east.
There's no roads everywhere.
Right. So you'll hitchhike out of Haines up to the Alaska-Canada border. Yeah. You're going to stop off in Whitehorse?
Not sure yet.
Maybe. Oh, okay. Everything is very unpredictable, so it can be anything.
Wherever the ride takes you.
Depends on the ride we get and people we meet and we're staying or we're leaving. And it depends.
And Americans think of hitchhiking as a fairly dangerous sport because of whom you could be picked up by. Have you done all right? Have you been frightened at all?
We had one situation. We like to call them situation, not problems or dangerous experience. Out of almost 800 rides. So I mean, it's not very significant at all. We meet wonderful people all the time. Mm-hmm. Whereas it is hitchhiking or seeking hospitality from people, as in places to stay for the night in a safe environment, as in such as a yard or sometime we get into people's home. We had one situation, so it's been wonderful. We met some great people in all the countries.
Means we had to leave a car once. We just had to go out of a car because it's not a good situation.
And like dive out of it or?
No.
Just had to say, no, we're stopping right here.
Yeah, but we wanted to leave. But it happened once over 800 rides, so it's a good ratio. And yeah, everybody, not only Americans, but even in Latin America, like everywhere, people say that it's dangerous to hitchhike, it's dangerous to go without knowing about where you're going and what you're doing. But actually, there's more, lots more good people than bad people. It's just that people don't know about that. They just read bad stories and then they're scared. But if you get a little bit adventurous and you dare to do it, then you can find out that it's actually not that dangerous.
The Greek writer Nikos Kazantzakis once said, "To be alive is to take loose your belt and go out and look for trouble." It sounds like you're alive. So
we don't find any trouble hitchhiking, though. We keep looking.
So how much do you carry with you?
Well, we carry a little more than regular backpackers, I'd say.
Okay.
We try to be very independent. If we get stuck on the side of the road, we'll be fine.
So like 40 pound packs?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
We have camping gear, cooking gear, and
food.
And did you set up a budget for this trip before you left?
Very randomly.
Okay.
If we've stayed in the hostels and I've taken buses, we wouldn't have been able to reach Alaska.
Basically, you've done this really on the way less than $5 a day plan here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely, yeah.
Have there been days when you could not find a meal?
No.
You've eaten well every day, huh?
Yeah, people give us food, they give us rides, they give us place to stay, they give us a lot. We always had food.
So Would you advise that someone do this?
No, we don't advise anybody to hitchhike ever because we don't want to be responsible for...
Feel guilty if something happens.
If something bad happens.
I guess my question was not to hitchhiking. It was... We just had a group of people who left here.
We heard about them. Yeah.
Yeah, they left in kayaks and they were going to get bicycles down in Seattle and they're on their way down south. I interviewed them a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Three weeks ago or so. I guess my question is, do you feel like you've grown through this process?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
How?
Open to anything, like situation, don't worry, whatever happens, it happens something. Open to people.
We've learned a lot of, we are dependent on people in certain ways, as we're dependent on people to give us rides and maybe a safe environment to stay in for the night.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, we're very independent, as in the way we can find solutions very quickly.
Very free.
To issues that are coming up every day.
So here comes the tough question. Go for it. Okay, you're both single, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're married now in, say, a few years. And a few years after that, you have a 16, 17-year-old daughter who comes to you and says, Mom, I read your book, and I think I'm ready to go. So tell me where I should start. What are you going to say?
I would say go with somebody. Take somebody with you. Don't go alone.
Yeah, don't go alone.
But you would say go.
But you can say no. Like, she would know everything you've done if she reads the book. So.
Wait until you're 18 and go with somebody.
Okay, so 18.
But we'll worry anyway, of course.
Yeah, of course.
As our parents do.
So call. Right, if you get time, right?
Yeah.
Have you had to take jobs to augment your income? As you come up?
We exchanged like trading work for something like food, accommodation, activities, but not for money.
What kinds of work?
I'm a photographer.
Oh,
so
really?
I was taking pictures for hotel for the dive shop that's because diving in Belize or for different. Hotel, I think that. So I was taking pictures for them, and we got a room, or we got dives, or we got,
So Amelie brings to the couple the photography as a possible bargaining chip. What does Marion have to do?
Whatever else I can do.
Whatever else you can do. You'll work in a restaurant if necessary. And you'll
we've done a few shifts waitressing.
For a few bucks and the tips, and maybe an arrangement with one of the customers to catch your next ride, it might not be a bad, might not be a bad arrangement.
Well, the tips in South America is not that great, so.
So what's your ultimate destination? How far north do you want to try to get?
We want to go to Prudhoe Bay.
Prudhoe Bay.
We heard it's not a wonderful sightseeing experience.
It leaves something, if you were thinking of the dive experience that you had and you were going to compare that to your trip to Prudhoe, it may be a different way of seeing the beauty of the environment, shall we say.
It's more about the end of the road, because we've been to the very end of the road in Patagonia, in Ushuaia. Like where you can go any further south, so we want to be able to not go any further north.
And put our toes in the Arctic Ocean.
Of course, absolutely. Well, let me give you a little little hint of what's coming up. When you get up there, the food is fabulous.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm absolutely serious. It's a company town, and they have cafeterias, and the food is first class. I mean, it's lobster at least once a week kind of thing. So,
wonderful.
Yeah, and my wife was up there a few years back on some business, and she ate quite well during the whole time she was up there. So you may maybe one of your gourmet meals on your trip be in Prudhoe Bay. So, and you'll probably wind up having to take a truck. So you may be riding in a 16-wheeler up the road.
Oh, we've done that.
We've done that sort of thing. Well, a fabulous adventure. Thank you for sharing a little chunk of it with us. I hope you do well. I hope you can catch a ride out of here and. to help you with the process, here is a song about hitchhiking.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 7th of June, 2012. It's the birthday of the linguist, best-selling author Deborah Tannen, born Brooklyn, 1945. Studied linguistics, wrote a book, You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation, which was on the bestseller list for almost 4 years. It's the 60th birthday of the Turkish novelist Orhan Pamuk, born in Istanbul, 1952, studied architecture, journalism, at 23 decided to become a novelist, lived with his mother, wrote full-time, and 7 years later published his first novel. He's worked as a novelist for 30 years, and aside from 3 years he spent in New York, he's lived his entire life in the Istanbul district of his birth. In 2005, Orhan Pamuk gave an interview in which he talked about the Armenian genocide and the mass killing of tens of thousands of Kurds. He said, 30,000 Kurds have been killed here, and 1 million Armenians, and almost nobody dares to mention that, so I do. Whereupon criminal charges were filed against Pamuk in Turkey. And Parliament passed a law making it illegal to make anti-Turkish remarks. There was a great outcry. Many authors, including Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Umberto Eco, John Updike, Günter Grass, spoke in Pamuk's defense, and the charges were dropped early in 2006. His most recent books include The Naive and Sentimental Novelist and Pieces from the View, Life, Streets, Literature. And it's the birthday of Louise Erdrich, born in Little Falls, Minnesota, 1954, grew up in Wahpeton, North Dakota, oldest of 7 children. Father came from a family of German immigrants, her mother, French Ojibwe. Both her parents taught in an Indian school. Louise Erdrich said, "My father used to give me a nickel for every story I wrote, and my mother wove strips of construction paper together and stapled them into book covers, so at an early age I felt myself to be a published author, earning substantial royalties." She went on to Dartmouth in the first class that admitted women, wrote poetry, supported herself as a farm laborer, lifeguard, a flag girl on a road construction crew. She came out with a book of poetry, Jack Light, then started writing fiction. And her first novel, Love Medicine, 1984, was a bestseller and won the National Book Critics Circle Award. Her book, The Roundhouse, is due out later this year. Here's a poem for today by Alden Nowlin, entitled The Old Gentleman. "If you want to ask a question," the chairman said, "begin by giving us your name and address." So the old gentleman, seated near the back of the auditorium, when it came his turn, said he was Louis Saint Laurent and came from Quebec. And we all of us laughed, because that's who he was, and it was the kind of little joke one expected of an elderly former prime minister. But the next time he said the same thing, and the time after that, said it quite simply, and it became obvious it wasn't meant to be funny, wasn't meant to be anything other than courteous, like his holding open the door for whoever happened to reach it at the same time he did, and never lighting a cigarette without offering the pack to the person in front and the person behind and the person seated on either side of him. The Old Gentleman by Alden Nowlin, from his selected poems, published by House of Anansi Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. And by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses manage their reputations online, because search results can be the new first impression. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
About 22 minutes to 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau. My guests in the studio right now are two folks from NOAA, and they are here to tell us a little bit about the Ted Stevens Marine Research Facility, which is a facility that's out the road kind of in Juneau and is sort of unique to Juneau because of our location and everything like that. So with me are Julie Spiegel, who's NOAA Public Affairs Officer, and Ralph Steves, who runs tours of the NOAA facility. Hi, Ralph.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, you bet. And Julie, tell us about the importance, I guess, of this facility. That we all know it's important to us, but what is its importance in the national scale?
Well, the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute is one of NOAA's premier science research facilities, and it's located right here in Juneau, which is one of the cool things, but it's a well-kept secret. Not many people know that it's out there on Lena Point Road. So with Ralph offering the tours this year, that gives people a chance to check it out.
So you go out the road and you turn left on Lena Point and then kind of loop around there, and there's a place where it splits and it goes down the hill to the AT&T site, and then you're up over the hill, right?
Right, and yeah. You'll get out there and you'll be driving along and you'll be thinking, did I miss it? Or, you know, where am I going? And then all of a sudden you'll come up to a stop and it'll be right there on your right. So
adequate parking and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So if I were to take a tour of the marine facility, what would I see?
Well, when you first come in the building, there's some beautiful aquariums, saltwater aquariums there as we wait to gather and all start at 1 o'clock. And they're as nice of aquariums as you'll see anywhere in the southeast. In fact, the only place in the state that have larger numbers of aquariums with more species is the Alaska Sea Life Center up in Seward. But that's in the lobby area. And then once we get started, we take a little bit of time and talk about the history of fisheries in the office section of the facility. And then we start to venture forth into the labs. And the labs are what's off limits, generally speaking, to the general public. And we will visit and pass by the biology labs, the genetic labs, the chemistry labs. And we also have this year, it's new, we have access to one of the wet laboratories where we get to go in and see where the experiments are being taken place. And there's also a holding tank in there, which is basically a touch tank, so our visitors can reach in and feel what 45-degree water feels like and touch some of the invertebrates. And at the end, we have a presentation on what's called the science in a sphere. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I'm not.
Well, there's only 62 of them in the world, and it's a display unit that is got a 7-foot in diameter sphere that hangs from the ceiling, and there's 4 projectors that project images on it. And it can be anything from the moon and the sun to all the planets to different models of global warming issues, sea currents, that kind of thing. And we have a presentation that I've put together that runs about 20 minutes, and it highlights the things that NOAA does as far as weather services and tsunami warning services. And out here in Juneau, of course, it's the fishery science. And then also we include a lot of data about global warming that NOAA has generated, and we put all that together in about a 21-minute presentation.
There's a smaller version of this, I think, over in the State Museum.
Actually, they're identical. In Juneau, there's 62 in the world. They're very high-profile places, like in Chicago, they're at the Museum of Science and Industry. Down in Washington, D.C., they're at the Smithsonian. Juneau is the only city in the world that has 2 of them.
Huh.
And that's an interesting story that goes with that, too.
I imagine it is.
Yeah.
So when you said 1 p.m. Are your tours daily?
Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. every day.
Okay. But not on the weekends?
Not on the weekends.
Okay. And is there a charge for the tour?
The tours, you've already paid for the tours.
Okay.
Pay your income tax.
Okay. So, and is there, do you have any age limits or anything like that?
Yes. This is designed for adults. We take 16-year-old teenagers up through adults, but primarily it is adults that come through. And, you know, there's all kinds of things for kids during the school year that go on out there, but we thought we needed to focus on some adult population, and that's why it's focused that way.
Ralph, who conducts the tours?
I conduct the tours.
Ah, so you're the tour guide.
Yeah.
And you got into this business down in the Seward facility, right?
I did. Once I retired from teaching, it was exactly the same time as the Alaska Sea Life Center opened up, and they were just getting on their feet on the ground. And I went in and applied, and I ended up working, initially as an interpreter on the floor doing guided tours, But then right after that, they decided they needed a director of interpreters. So I worked in that capacity for 8 years.
And I'm not sure everyone in town knows about the Seward Sea Life Center. It's been down there for...
It's the Alaska Sea Life Center located in Seward.
Yeah.
And it's been there, and I'm off the top of my head, I think 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, it was all research and a little bit of visitation. Some beautiful aquariums in there.
If you lived in Seward and knew somebody, you could get in, but that was about what it was when they first opened up.
That's no longer the case.
Ah, so now it's open to the public? And
yes. It's open to the public, and primarily at this point, the big emphasis is on tourism.
Uh-huh. So they have a sea lion down there that's quite a senior citizen and quite a large sea lion.
Yeah, Woody, last I knew, Woody was around 1,900 pounds, and he must be about 18 years old now, which in captivity, stealth sea lions live longer than they do out in nature. In nature, 18, 20-year-old is a really old stealth sea lion. But I guess they're expecting Woody's going to hold on for a while longer.
Compared to that view, when you take the tour of the NOAA facility here, what is the star?
Science.
Science.
Yeah. The tour here is basically talking about how NOAA is able to come up with the numbers that gets turned over to the management units that manage the fisheries. And what we're seeking is sustainability of the fisheries so that we can go back year after year and harvest that product out of the water and continue to enjoy it the following year and not overfishing.
Okay. And again, now, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 16 and up is the target for the tour. And about how long does the tour take?
The tours last about 50 minutes, and then the science on the sphere is another 19. So the whole experience is about an hour and 10 minutes.
About an hour and 10 minutes. And the interesting thing is if you were doing this tour, you'd have the opportunity to stop off a couple of other places as you were out the road anyway, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We're real close to St. Teresa's, and the Arboretum's just down the road a little bit. And I might add that they're all no admission to go into each of these places.
So basically this is the very bargain-free tour of Juneau kind
of thing. One of the nicest slices of Juneau that doesn't cost an arm and a leg as far as financially.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much also for
Julie
for coming down and telling us about the importance of the sea life, of the, not Sea Life Center, but the importance of the Ted Stevens Marine Research Facility.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you very much for having us.
My pleasure.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
Until the winner is declared by whoever.
Hundreds of student athletes gather every spring here at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage to compete in Native Youth Olympics games. And while some teens seal hop and two-foot high kick, and others stick pole and one-hand reach, one group of kids is getting down to a different type of business. This year, six students from Kodiak Island Villages joined the Student Broadcasting Veterans from the Bering Strait School District to webcast the NYO Games live over the Internet. While the BSSD kids have a lot of experience doing this, the Kodiak ones learned on the fly. The Kodiak kids are all part of SKILL, or Students of Kodiak Island Learning to Lead.
We don't even have any equipment.
Damon Hargraves works with the Enliven Project for the Kodiak Island Borough School District, and he helped coordinate the partnerships, equipment, and the students for this.
It was a leadership group that came together that saw this as a goal, saw this as a project that they wanted to do. And so through the help of others, this leadership group was able to come here and do this broadcast and have that long-term goal of bringing NYO back to the villages.
17-year-old Stephanie Brentison is from Akiak. She says she hopes the NYO broadcast will get something happening in her village.
There's kids that want to do it in my village, but there's not a coach for the NYO.
So do you think what you're doing now is going to help maybe get a team going in the future?
I think it would really help.
The SKILL students are from Old Harbor, Akiak, Larson Bay, Karluk, Uzinki, and Kodiak City. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
Forecast just received. Tonight, showers. Friday, cloudy. Friday night, mostly cloudy. Scattered rain showers. Saturday, decreasing clouds. Saturday night, partly cloudy. Sunday, mostly cloudy. Highs around 65. The word rain did not appear in that Sunday forecast, nor did it make a big deal in the Saturday forecast. So it looks like we're going to have a weekend here. And to tell us what we can do on that weekend, here's Nancy DeTurney with Arts Up.
Well, of course, it's celebration, and this is your once-every-two-year opportunity to have lots and lots of all sorts of things going on. I would suggest that you go on to the Sea Alaska Heritage website or our website and look at the calendar and find out all the different things. There's a bunch of free events going on over at the Jack. That I would have to say the gallery opening was phenomenal, and the artwork over there, absolutely stunning. So please come by the Jack and take a look at that. But, okay, so the Native Artist Market should be out. It's down where the Walter Soboleff building is going to be built, in the, what used to be the pit.
Yeah. The hole in the ground.
Yes, not anymore. And so that's where that's going on. There's Oyster Fest going on down there. There's just all kinds of stuff that's going to run.
Oyster
Fest. Yeah. You know,
More details.
I suggest you go down for lunch.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So it's all Alaskan oysters.
All right.
Yeah.
All
so we just had a soapberry contest over at the Jack, and it was pretty good. There's a film on all this weekend for the Rights of All. Let's see. We've just missed that one for this afternoon, but it's running again. And later tonight, there will be Reel, spelled R-E-E-L, Engine, which is also over at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. At 5 o'clock, it is an all-ages songwriting, some drum song project at the Jack, so that should be lively. There's a black seaweed judging contest at 8 o'clock. 9 p.m., something completely different, sit in with Jay at the Rendezvous. He's looking for drummers and bassists to join him down there tonight.
Little impromptu jam sessions.
Yep, huh? Yeah. At 10 on Friday, the artists who've won past us Heritage Juried Art Shows are going to be giving some demonstrations in the Jack starting at 10 in the morning on Friday. Should be great to be able to listen to them and see how they do what they do, because they're phenomenal artists. 1 p.m. there's a form line design workshop. It's part one of a two-part series. Nicholas Galanin is instructing that. Again, you have the opportunity to see For the Rights of All at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. There's a storytelling workshop by Ishmael Hope at also at the Jack, I think it is. Yes, and then you can see Real Engine again. Tom Loker's up at the Tram. We have an Authors at Sea Whale Watching Cruise opportunity at 6 p.m. Several different authors, I think Flip Nicklin, and I don't remember the list, but this is put on by Hearthside Books, and you can get tickets from them to go out on this. There's a poetry slam, there's a canoe paddle ceremony, there's things happening at the Alaskan Bar, and of course, sit in with the band. Jason Caputo will be, again, at the Rendezvous. On Saturday is the big parade. Come on down. This is an amazing, amazing display of all of the different groups in their regalia. They march from Mount Roberts Tramway to Centennial Hall. Should be starting at 8 in the morning, usually finishes around noon. So it's an amazing, and I'm glad you didn't say rain, because the last time they were here, it did rain, and it was kind of miserable. At 10 a.m., Mike Hatch, Eagle Crest Road Race. Check in at Mike Hatch to get involved there. It's the second Saturday Farmers and Crafters Market out at the Airport Shopping Center. That starts at 10. There's a language open house. It's part of celebration over at the Jack at 11:30. There is a lecture on Northern Northwest Coast Native headgear, a form line, the rest of the form line design stuff. A spaghetti feed for a fundraiser for the Juneau Senior Center at 4:30 p.m. Go down, and that's at the Senior Center. It's the Symphony Pops concert.
It is.
It is, and I'm
Kyle Lally Pickett was in here and told us that it's going to be amazing.
It is going to be amazing. They're going to playing with the Thunderbird.
Two Duke Ellington orchestra and big band pieces.
I just think we're all going to be wanting to be up and dancing. But anyway, that's at the high school auditorium downtown. So, and then at 9 o'clock, Kari Griven and the Wrist Rockets will be over at Louie's, which is also known as PP's Douglas Inn. It's on 3rd Street in Douglas, and that's always a good time. On Sunday, we have the Sunday Market. We started those.
Oh, good.
It was,
okay.
They're noon to 4-ish. And this year we have live music. I think it's going to be the String Ensemble Kids going to be performing.
Have you had them? You've had a market already. What was the most interesting thing that came up?
I was in Paris.
Oh, you were in Paris. Did you hear I had two Parisians on here who are hitchhiking from Patagonia to Prudhoe? Yeah,
no.
They were our guests this afternoon.
Oh, well, all right. Well, I missed the first Sunday
Two charming young ladies from Paris who decided that this is what they wanted to do with their lives.
Well, I would... I guess you never are happy with what you have, right? I don't know. Anyway, also on Sunday at 2 p.m. over at the museum, Kiska, a WW2 Battlefield Landscape Lecture with Dirk Spenneman. At 3 o'clock, it's the family movie afternoon over in the Douglas Library. That's free, and I couldn't get the information as to which library or which movie they're showing. Let's see. Monday's kind of a day off.
Oh, nothing happening on Monday
that I could see.
Uh-huh.
On Tuesday at 7 p.m.
Hey, we need Monday to relax. Let's get a glass of wine and sit out on the porch.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Monday.
Anyway,
let me look here.
Like?
Sunday night through Tuesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, unfortunately. Covered porch.
With the cocktails that have the little parasols.
There you go.
Anyway, Tuesday, Science and the Art of the Northern Lights. This is an offering by the Marie Drake Planet. Planetarium folks. If you don't know where the planetarium is, it's between Harborview and the high school.
Yeah, Harborview Elementary and the high school.
I'm glad these folks, they're volunteers and they're taking it on and doing all sorts of great things, and this should be a really interesting one. At noon on Wednesday, there's a book signing, Ross Cohen, Breaking Ice for Arctic Oil and the Long View. This is at Hearthside Books downtown, and then I believe he's again doing it at noon on Thursday. Don't you like garden gnomes?
I do.
Yeah. So
particularly if they're sent around the world and postcards.
Well, you can. Yeah. There's a kids' hand-built gnomes thing happening at the Canvas on Wednesday at 1 o'clock.
Well, everyone should have a gnome. So this is
your opportunity.
Yeah.
And at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, it's the KRNN Spotlight with Marion Call over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. I think that'll do. Don't you think?
That's the whole schmear. Huh?
Well, that's the celebration is a big schmear.
Celebration is indeed. Starts with a big parade, ends with a big parade, and in between a lot of dancing.
A lot of dancing and a lot of really fine artwork. So I hope to see all of you over at the Jack.
I think that's a wonderful possibility for us all to take part in.
Are we done?
Nancy, thank you so much for bringing us an update each week for all of this wonderful information.
Well, thanks for your part in making that happen.
Well, a little music to go out with by the group we've been hearing in the background. They're called the 12 Girls Band out of China, high-energy group with some interesting instrumentation. Jeff Brown will be back tomorrow with Juno Afternoon. His guests include Sarah Ray, an upcoming Association for the Study of Literature and Environment conference, and some information about the Relay for Life and the usual features, Writer's Almanac, a little bit of music and all that sort of thing tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators so that our signal can be heard clearly throughout the area. In the valley in Auk Bay, you can tune to K276AF. That's on 103.1 megahertz. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, if you move your dial back and forth a little bit, you'll catch K269AO, repeating our signal on 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM by tuning to 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9 on the FM band. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. And you can also receive KTOO Juno by switching on GCI cable on your TV set to digital channel 871. You can also hear our sister stations, KRNN on 872 and KXLL on 873. And our continuous stream is also online at www.ktoo.org.